Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
I'm Manny.
And this is your new Comics of Wednesday episode for December 16th, 2020. Manny and I are going to talk about a few of the books that we got a chance to read and let you know, spoiler-free, what our thoughts are on them. And in the interest of full disclosure, I did not get to read all the books that I wanted to. I had about 17 books on my list, and unfortunately, I broke my phone and spent the last 7 hours procuring and, well, 11 hours really, procuring and getting a new phone set up so I could do my day job. I'm almost there. I'm like 90% there. So that's the good news. But I swear, man, you remember when you used to be excited about getting a new phone? And then you reach a certain age where you're like, you just don't want the hassle of having to download the apps and your pictures and transfer stuff over. Yeah, that's where I am now. Like, I didn't want a new phone. My old phone was 3 years old, but there was nothing wrong with it. I was happy to have it. It's just annoying that I have a new phone.
Well, I mean, yeah, I had an iPhone 6 for the longest time, and I refused to change over until the phone was literally falling apart. Yeah, I know the feeling.
And I know I shouldn't complain, you know, because of my day job. I have this brand new Galaxy S20 that, you know, my work pays for. But it's just annoying, man. I had comics to read. So this episode's also part of our 12 Days of the Comic Source, where we are bringing you tons of episodes every day on the countdown to Christmas to enjoy the holidays. So there should be 3 episodes out today. We'll have this new Comic Book Day episode. We will have a Kickstarter spotlight, and we will have a holiday-themed episode where I go over the Christmas with the Superheroes from DC 1989. Also edited by Mark Waid, just like the one that I did on Tuesday. That was Christmas with the Superheroes 1988, which was a collection of DC holiday stories from over the years. And then the next year, Mark Waid, based on the success probably of the Christmas with the Superheroes 1998, was able to get new content, new Christmas stories, holiday stories, starring DC heroes. So it's a really fun time. So be sure you join us for our other 2 episodes that are out today. All right, I'm going to kick it off, and I'm going to sort of cheat. I'm going to talk about 3 books at once, sort of. So Manny and I, just before we started, were talking about Endless Winter. He hasn't had a chance to check any of it out, but I've very much been enjoying it. And there are 3 more parts of Endless Winter out. Today, as we're recording this, yesterday, as you're listening. So we had an Aquaman title. We had a Teen Titans title. And we had a Justice League title. And I think it actually goes Aquaman, Justice League, and then Teen Titans, as far as the order that you're supposed to read them in. So I've really been enjoying the event so far. I've talked before about how it hasn't really had the event sprawl that a lot of other DC events have had in the past. And the other thing that's really good about it is, even though all of this is being written by Andy Lanning and Ron Mars across the various titles that the crossover is happening in, you still get like a spotlight on whichever character's book that it is, right? So when you're reading the Aquaman title, it feels like an Aquaman title. It certainly ties in to, the event, the Endless Winter event. But it really does focus on Aquaman. Although we are getting at the beginning of every issue, we're getting the flashback, which is kind of telling the tale of the Frost King and the long ago or what have you with the Justice League Viking when the Frost King first roamed the Earth. So the Aquaman, let me run through the creators real fast. For some reason, I can't seem to find the creators listed anywhere except for the front cover. And I just don't think that is correct. I'm not sure. I've flipped through the book like 6 times now, and I'm just not seeing it. So I'm not sure why that is. It really bugs me that, and we've talked about this before, that they're not consistent with, you know, where they put the creator. So I'm just off on the front cover. Andy Lanning, Ron Mars, as I said, Miguel Mondoca handles the pencils for the main part of the issue. And then I don't know if it's FCO or Yvonne Placencia. I think it's Yvonne Placencia on colors. And then the flashbacks are handled pencils by Marco Santucci and colors by Arif Prianto. So I don't know. This was probably my favorite, though it's close, of the three Endless Winter books that were out today, simply based on the amazing art of Miguel Mondoca. Plus, Andy, it is Yvonne Placencia. Clayton Cowell on letters, Troy Pateri on letters for the flashback sequences. So that covers everybody. Man, it really blends in those credits. But anyway, like I was saying, seeing Andy Curry, Aquaman and Mira's daughter, she's just fun, and the way Miguel draws her is fun. She's just this chubby little ball of cuteness. And there's also a double page spread. I don't want to give away too much, so I'm not going to say who Aquaman and Mira are leading, but they're leading a charge of somebody. And it's this amazing double page spread of them leading this charge to basically stave off any effects or any consequences of what the Frost King is doing on the surface and have it affect Atlantis. So we have seen in the other pages of Endless Winter where the other members of the Justice League have been saying, nobody knows where Aquaman is. Well, he's busy taking care of Atlantis. And I think Batman even says as much in the Justice League issue. So the Aquaman one, probably my favorite. Art was absolutely spectacular. Let me talk about the Justice League issue real fast. Justice League number 58. Again, that initial three or four pages, maybe five pages by Marco Santucci on art. Just stunningly good. So great. And something happens in the flashback of that one that kind of explains how we... It's kind of the turning point, maybe the climax, you'd call it, of the flashback, how the Frost King sort of turned bad, if you will. So this issue credits Andy Lanning, Ron Mars writing. Art in the regular part of the issue is by Zermanico. Colors by Alex Sinclair. Letters by Tom Napolitano. Flashback sequence, as they all are, Marco Santucci on art. Colors by Arif Prianto and letters by Troy Pateri. So this issue, like I said, it... all of them do a good job. All the issues so far have done a great job of focusing on the characters they need to focus on. This one's pretty Jon Stewart heavy, which is great. It gives us some insight into Jon Stewart personally, and there's some really great action in it as well. So a good transition issue and sort of a little bit of a turning point in the event in that the Justice League in this issue, they kind of realize, hey, we got to stop like trying to, they've been fighting the sort of the symptoms, you know, the consequences, you know, try to stop the cold, save people, whatever. And in this issue, they kind of realize, hey, we need to go after the guy who's in charge because, you know, we can't keep putting out fires, so to speak, because they're just going to, you know, we keep killing ice monsters and just more ice monsters continue to spawn. We got to get at the heart of it. So probably my least favorite of the three. But still solid. And then the last one, like I mentioned, is the Teen Titans, where we start to see the consequences in the flashback part of the book that we saw last time, you know, where things started to go poorly. And then these are the Teen Titans. So, you know, what Damian was doing with them, having them kidnap villains and brainwash them basically. And now they're trying to kind of make up for that. They know they screwed up and this is them starting to atone and showing that they really do have the ability to be heroes in their own right. And we do have some other older Titans show up, and it appears they're going to kind of mentor, the younger Titans. So it's a good dynamic. This issue was written by Mars and Lanning. Pencils were by Jesus Moreno, inks by Cam Smith, colors by Hi-Fi, letters by Rob Lee, and the flashback sequence, you know, same three creators, as previously, Santucci, Prianto, and Troy Pateri. So we also get introduced to a new character with some powers, wondering if she might be joining the Teen Titans. And there's a little bit of seeds planted here, a little bit of mention. We've heard it and seen it in the solicitations for the Future State about how they're talking about a Teen Titans school being established. And then, you know, that's what's going to be coming in March. We're going to be talking about that school and the training. So I have a feeling whoever's writing Teen Titans, I think it might have been announced, but I can't remember right now off the top of my head. But that I think that's what we're going to get. We're going to get like a Teen Titans type school. And I have a feeling it's going to be, you know, people like Donna Troy and Cyborg and Beast Boy that are the quote unquote teachers. And we're going to see heroes like Wallace West and Crush as the students, and probably this new girl as well that debuts here and manifests some power. So all in all, I've been enjoying this event. These are three solid issues. The Aquaman one does stand out above the rest though. All right, Manny, I know I just hogged it all with three books right in a row. So take it away. What do you got?
My first six books are, no, I'm just kidding. I could do these together, but I don't want to. My first book is going to be from DC, Tales from the Dark Multiverse, Crisis on Infinite Earths, number one. This story requires, I think, a little bit of understanding of the background of what's going on, just because it's such a big, it's part of such a big event, and this really flips it on its head, as these Tales from the Dark Multiverses are supposed to do. Your creative team, first of all, let's start with that. It's written by Steve Orlando with artwork by Mike Perkins and colored by Andy Troy. To describe this book, it's brutal. It is. I gotta say, I did not expect for it to just really even open up that way. And then really just kick you and all those DC heroes in the nuts. So we're pretty much used to seeing like Asgardian villains or deities used more in the Marvel universe instead of the DC one. But in this case, the DC just like Marvel also has. Greek gods. DC also has their own Asgardian villains. In this case, we are looking at Surtur, who was also a Thor villain in Thor Ragnarok, if you remember. So the DC version of Surtur is part of the Last Days of the Justice Society by Roy Thomas, David Ross, and Mike Gustovich after the events of Crisis. If you want to know more about it, read about it, because I'm not going to explain it all. A point is, the Justice Society was able to defeat him and save the Earth. And this was at the cost of the team's imprisonment. Unfortunately, in the Dark Multiverse, we have things go a little different. Not to give too much away, but it's right in the beginning, so I don't really think it's too much. They sent over an inexperienced Justice League to battle Surtur, and it does not go well, which leaves Justice Society to have to battle them. I mean, we don't even get to see the demise of most of the Justice League. I mean, Surtur actually just holds up Hal Jordan's outfit and was like, "Yeah, this is one of the guys you guys sent over." And yeah, not very cool. Alan Scott has a huge role in this book, and it was very, very surprising, very Marvel-esque as to what ends up happening. I'm not going to say what, but what ends up happening, the deal he makes, it reminds me of a certain character. I'm not going to say who, because it'll actually give away too much of the book. So it's really All-Star Squadron heavy, but at no point in the book does it ever make you feel like they have a shot at winning, especially when you start seeing different heroes going down. But as you know, the will, the spirit of a hero, it's always positive, and they're going to keep fighting on, and that's what they continue to do. So it was very, very entertaining, and I think it probably out of all these one shots that they've come out with is probably my favorite, because it was just really well done. I really liked even the artwork in it, but I don't know. There's so many books with happy endings and things like that. It's nice to see something go down where it's just all bad. So yeah, that's going to be Dark Multiverse Crisis on Infinite Earths. That's one to pick up, and hopefully if you do, you'd actually want to know the real story behind it. And if you haven't read Crisis on Infinite Earths, which you should, then it'll spark that interest.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of those tales of the Dark Multiverse, you kind of know going in that it's not going to end well, right? It's the Dark Multiverse. And so I was really curious about this one, like, how are they going to flip it? So I found it really interesting. It was really good. I know exactly what character you're talking about. And yeah, I got the same vibe. I'm like, oh, we're going there, right? But the thing about these Dark Multiverse books, what's so brutal about them is, so we know as DC fans, we know how things were supposed to go or how they went, right? I mean,
right.
Not all happy endings, you know. Crisis on Infinite Earths, so you have the death of Flash, Barry Allen, and you have the death of Supergirl, and you know, a lot of other characters die as well. Those are the two big ones. And it's sad, and you know, and you feel bad, and things just don't go necessarily the way you want them to go. Even recently in Scott Snyder's Justice League, you know, when they were trying to win against Doom, they just kept losing time and time again. So it's not always a happy ending. But you can't help but root for the happy ending. And knowing the way the crisis went the first time, and then seeing this, and you're hoping for a happy ending. You're hoping that things can go the way you want them to go. And I'm not spoiling. I'm not saying whether or not the Earth gets destroyed or not, because that's not the point. But the thing is, you know it's not going to go bad. You know there's going to be a twist. And that's what makes it that much more heart-wrenching to see. You know, choices made and sacrifices and things like that. So yeah, you're right, man. It was brutal. It was much more brutal than I was expecting. It was almost like Orlando, you know, rolled up the entire tragedy of Crisis on Infinite Earths, the whole 12 issues into one issue, man. Cause it was brutal. Yeah.
That's exactly what I was going to comment right now, is that when you pick up a book like that and you see that battle and you see the heroes, you know, giving it their all and the sacrifices and what they're willing to do, you expect that bright, that heroic moment to come. And then when it doesn't come, you're kind of left, you know, wondering what happened, or the sacrifice they make isn't necessarily what you expect. I know we saw that with what happened with Wonder Woman in one of the previous stories, where her body was taken over. So yeah, I mean, talk about doom and gloom.
Yeah, for sure. But they're selling, man. People are eating those dark.
They're good. This one's really good.
Yeah, yeah. I think this one, and Flashpoint have been my two favorite ones. I really enjoyed that Flashpoint one. Did you read that one last week, right?
No, I haven't read that one.
Oh, okay.
I have it on my iPad, and I just haven't got to that one.
All right, well, let's move on. I'll talk about Fantastic Four number 27. So I kind of fell off Fantastic Four for a while. I was enjoying what Dan Slott was doing, but it was just one of those books that I was buying it, but I wasn't reading it because I just read so many books. And so I kind of fell off. And then Mark Brooks started doing the cover, so I started picking it up again. And I'm like, well, if I'm picking it up, I might as well read it. So I've read the last couple issues, and they've been really good. And this one's no exception. So let me get the creative team real quick. As I mentioned, Dan Slott is writing. We have RB Silva, Juanan Ramirez, and Z Carlos as artists on this issue. Chris O'Halloran is handling the colors, and Joe Caramagna is doing the letters. And as I said, great cover art by Mark Brooks. So we saw at the end of last issue the return of a villain that we saw at the very beginning of Dan Slott's run, a villain called the Griever. And she is basically entropy personified. Like it really seems like Slott is trying to put her up there with the level of like Eternity or the Living Tribunal. You know, she's this cosmic entity that is just uber powerful. And the Fantastic Four And those first couple of issues were able to sort of trick her and escape and keep her from destroying the entire Marvel multiverse, or whatever term Marvel uses to describe their parallel dimensions or what have you. And we saw last issue that she's returned. So if you haven't been following Fantastic Four, basically what happened is Reed found this artifact that basically created a what's called a forever gate. And so basically it links to every place in the entirety of existence and every time in the entirety of existence. And you kind of dial in with, you know, a frequency or whatever the Fantastic Four tries to set up, you know, a way to pick where it goes. But the problem is once the gates open, they don't open it. Some other circumstances happen and it gets opened on Earth at the site of where the Baxter Building used to be. And so they take it upon themselves to start guarding it, right? Because it's kind of their fault and they're trying to figure out a way to shut it down. And that's where the Griever comes back. So that's basically the story leading up to this issue. So what do they do? How can they get the gate closed? And right away, part of what sucked me back into Fantastic Four and start reading it, because I can just buy it and check out the great Mark Brooks covers. I don't have to necessarily read it. But it's so... like this idea, what Slott has created, this idea of a forever gate is like so in the wheelhouse of who the Fantastic Four are. You know, people, they think of them as superheroes, but they're really not. Like Fantastic Four comic, especially back when Stan Lee and Jack Kirby were doing it, it wasn't a superhero comic. It was an adventure comic. You know, it's that fantastical adventure. They're scientific explorers. They're out there, you know, discovering new worlds, you know, facing crazy circumstances and meeting alien races and using crazy scientific gizmos invented by Reed Richards. It's much more that. It's much more of that old kind of adventure story than it is a superhero. It's a lot more like maybe Indiana Jones than a Superman story. And coming up with this idea of this forever gate where any manner of alien creatures or what have you can come walking through, and having the Fantastic Four have to deal with that is just, it's pure Fantastic Four. It's exactly who they're supposed to be. So Slott's been doing a really great job. This particular issue is a lot of fun. I'm not going to spoil anything. I can't even really talk about anything that happens in the issue without spoiling, other than to say it's exactly what you hope it would be. There's plenty of alien creatures. There's plenty of crazy gadgets from Reed. There's, you know, plans within plans, and things don't always go the way they're supposed to. And we have a really cool climax, and then an ending that kind of tosses that climax on its head. So all in all, a really great issue, a lot of fun. I did feel early on when I was reading Fantastic Four, if I had any complaint about it, I felt like it was a little slow. The pacing was a little slow from Slott. That is not the case at all with this issue. A lot of action moves along really quickly. The last couple issues I've read have been that way. So really been enjoying it. So if you like those old classic Fantastic Four, that era of Lee and Kirby and that real adventuresome feel and not knowing what's going to happen next, and even the Fantastic Four themselves not knowing what's going to happen next, you definitely should be reading this book. The entire art team does a great job. The colors are bright and vibrant, like you would expect from a Fantastic Four book. The storytelling, the layout, you know, there's three artists on this. I didn't even realize when I was reading it. So that's how consistent the art is, even though there's three artists working on it. I didn't realize until I just read you guys the credits. So all in all, a really, really well done book. And that Mark Brooks covers is awesome. It's got Franklin Richards on the cover wearing like Iron Man armor, but like a Fantastic Four version of Iron Man armor. It's got the Thing wearing a sweater that's got some rips and tears in it with a big menorah, because you know the thing is Jewish, so it's got a big menorah on the front of it. Then we have Dragon Man there, as well as Silver Surfer. So absolutely a amazing cover, really fun issue, really digging on Fantastic Four these days. All right, you're up, Manny. What do you got?
Next up, I have DC's Rorschach number 3, written by Tom King, with art by George Fornes, with colors by Dave Stewart. This is really turned into one of those mystery detective books. And Tom King is definitely the correct writer to take this on with his style of writing that he likes to do. And I know I sound like a broken record, and we say it over and over again, how he likes to subtly give you hints throughout his runs. And then you kind of have to go back and put it all together or realize, oh, that's what he meant. Oh, this is what's going on. So issue two specifically, if you remember last month, they we started really looking into some of the characters in a sense of an investigation. Issue three now, we're looking at the upbringing of Lara and how her dad raised her, and how events from that Watchmen universe affected her dad, and affected her mom. And this is all done from the viewpoint of the detective reading a journal. And it's done really, really well, because it doesn't lead you in a specific direction. Tom King allows you to really make up your own mind of what you think of Lara and the way that she's raised. One person may see her as a protagonist, while another person may see her as an antagonist. And for a book which is called Rorschach, I think it's fantastic that as a reader, I'm allowed to make up my own mind as to what I see and what I understand from what I'm reading. And then obviously in the next issues going forward, we're going to be kind of reined into what is reality. But for now, I'm allowed to deduce what I think of the characters in the book, which is exactly what the detective is doing, because he's trying to figure everything out from a diner. I thought it's a great book, not necessarily for everyone, because of the fact, I mean, it's dense. There's a lot of words, but if you're into that kind of thing, if you're a Tom King fan, then you're not going to have any issues with this at all.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. I didn't realize we were going to like fall down the rabbit hole of Hannah, and get that origin. I wasn't expecting it, but I just talked to Tom recently the other day. We talked a little bit about Rorschach and the things he's trying to do, and yeah, has me really excited. You guys will get to hear that conversation, by the way, on Christmas Day when that episode is released. But yeah, I thought this was a really great issue. I love the way that he's telling the story in flashback, mm-hmm. And Hannah, Wyoming, a place I never heard of. And he makes it feel like I've been there, he makes it that real. So it was poignant, and it was sad, and it was kind of crazy, a little bit of conspiracy theory stuff, but also all too believable, unfortunately. So mm-hmm. Really, really great issue. All right. Let me talk about next book. It's another Marvel issue, and it's a Mortal Hulk number 41, written by Al Ewing. Art is by Joe Bennett. Colors by Ryu Jose. And let me get to the end for the rest of the credits. Colors by Paul Mounts, actually, I should say. Ryu Jose and Bellardino Bravo are the inkers, and Corey Petit on letters. So, Manny and I have said recently about Immortal Hulk, we feel like it's starting to drag a little bit, and it needs to sort of pick up. Well, this issue picks up. We get a good chunk of story. We get story advancement, and we get a Thing Hulk fight. And those are always classic, when you got the Thing and the Hulk. And not only is it a cool fight between the two of them, it's very meta. Like, the Thing is very much aware the entire time of what a history he has with the Hulk. And the Hulk is aware of that too, eventually, in the story. And the two of them, fighting and then talking and, thinking about the history they've had. It's great. And plus we get some exposition that sort of explains what's been going on, that kind of condenses it down and really sets the story up to start moving forward again, because I really feel like we've sort of been treading water these last couple of issues. So I feel like in this issue, we've sort of gained some traction, and I expect the next couple issues to be action packed. So I know you didn't get a chance to read it, Manny. But I'll be curious after you get a chance to check it out, if you feel the same way. And also the cover by Alex Ross is really cool. It's the Thing and the Hulk, and they're sitting like in a diner, in a booth in a diner. And the booth is like crumbling underneath them because they're so heavy, they can barely squeeze in. So it's kind of fun. But yeah, I've been waiting for one of these sort of issues with Immortal Hulk for it to kind of kick into gear again, because it has felt like it's been kind of slow lately, been dragging a little bit. So this, I feel like this gets it back on track though. All right, what do you have up next?
Let's go with Images Post-Americana number one, written and art by Steve Skroki and colored by Dave Stewart. So this is a dystopian America that we see here. I mean, it is messed up. It's funny because, you know, as messed up as it is here in 2020, this one takes it to another level. It's not very clear as far as what exactly led to this this point in America, unless I missed it. But the point is, there are like underground colonies in the United States trying to put back together the country. Unfortunately, the people who were supposed to be in power never made it. But like the 2%ers did. So they're the ones who are who have really put themselves into power and now are trying to execute their own plan. All while there's a group of people, like I seen, call them rebels, who are trying to take them out, because obviously they would be wrong for the United States. During that time, obviously out in the Americas, there have been other groups, kind of almost like I would describe them as
Mad Max settlements.
Yeah, there you go, Mad Max settlements, and they are insane. They include all kinds of people, including cannibals, and I mean they have their own strange laws. They're very he does a really good job at showing that they're very driven by like bodily needs and things like that. It's, and the artwork really helps into kind of painting that picture of a really disturbing way of living, almost like animalistic. So it's really entertaining, and it's done really, really well. There's kudos to as much work as he put into not only in the writing but in the artwork, because there's some panels in this book where there's so much to see that you, it's almost like a Where's Waldo, where there's just so much going on that you can miss a lot of things if you turn the page. But behind it, there's that really simple story of trying to of the lower class trying to take over the elite, and I think that it's turning out fantastic so far. There's some chickens in it that I thought were done really clever, and they explained them very well. So everything has a purpose and a reason. And I really like that too, that things weren't in this book just because it serves a purpose as to what happened to the United States and how did these people get here. So a lot of background was told here. So I look forward to the second issue to really kind of move forward and see what's going on, but definitely the table set, and it's a different America.
Yeah, chickens finally get a little revenge for people always eating chicken.
The one other thing I have to say is that it does also, he's really clever in the way he introduces characters and then they're not there. And you're like, oh, wait, so that's not a character I'm supposed to be following?
Yeah, it's like Walking Dead. You never know who's important, who's not.
Right.
I just thought Carolyn, whatever, I guess it's Carolyn. Lyn, but anyway, she's just badass. She's like, take no prisoners, I'm not putting up with your crap. I'm living out here in a crazy world with all these Mad Max motherfuckers, and I'm just gonna, you know, I'm not taking crap from anybody. So I think she might end up being my favorite character when all said and done. Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see. All right, up next, I have another issue of Immortal Hulk. This is a King in Black tie-in, so it's a one-shot. Still written by the same writer. It's Al Ewing. Aaron Cutter is the artist. Frank Martin and Eric Arcieniga handle the colors, and Corey Petit on letters. And this is nearly a silent issue. And we get 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, and it's New York City, and we get some dragons. I guess they're the King in Black dragons or symbiotes or whatever. I'm not reading King in Black. I'm not familiar. I haven't been reading Venom. I don't know about symbiote dragons or whatever. So I'm not really sure. I picked this up because it was Immortal Hulk. And also the reason I decided to review it and talk about it is because I saw a couple of people on Twitter talking about how amazing it was. A couple of other press people. And so I was blown away. Like I said, it's a completely silent issue. So Aaron Cutter's art has to do the heavy lifting, and it does the job amazingly. The art is beautiful. It's gorgeous. It has a holiday feel. There's snow. There's toys. There's cheer, but there's the Hulk, and there's the body horror that you come to expect from a Immortal Hulk. And it's just so well done. You know, when you do an issue like this and you do it the right way, it shows the storytelling ability of sequential art and everything that goes with it. And it's a fun issue. The climax is great. Like I was talking to myself out loud, you know, badass when it goes down. And yeah, it's really, really, really good. And so I wanted to be sure to mention it. So there's not a whole lot else to say, because like I said, it's a silent issue, but it's done really, really well. What do you have up next, Manny?
I have Batman 105, written by James Tynion IV, art by Carlo Pagulayan, Danny Mickey, Alvaro Martinez, Christian Deuce, and David Barron. So this is a conclusion of the Ghost Stories that ran right after the post-Joker War landscape, pretty much. And last we saw, Batman was still kind of under the influence of a tranquilizer that Ghost Hunter had gave him. And at the same time, Clown Hunter had his sword, and he was getting ready to kill Harley Quinn, who was still on one of the other tables. This is the last issue, and then they're going to take that break. They're taking that break for Future State, and then they're going to resume afterwards. I gotta say, there's not much I can say about this issue, because once again, I felt like it was a little repetitive from something we've seen a couple of issues back, where they talk about Ghost Hunter and Batman agreement of not to kind of infiltrate on each other's territory. It felt like the conversation that I've already heard once or twice in the last few issues, when he kind of looked back. And then it just, the interaction between Clown Hunter and Harley Quinn was kind of dry. I don't know. It just didn't resonate with me, and I really didn't feel for either of them, to be honest with you. Maybe it's just I still have quite an issue with, you know, Harley Quinn. All of a sudden, just I don't even know if she's considered a hero now. Is she an anti-hero? Exactly what? Where she really falls? But it's just strange for her to take that drastic turn from villain to what she is now, and you know, we're just really supposed to be okay with it. And then it was just I'm trying to find a word, just bland the way it ended. There wasn't necessarily a reason for the things that happened. They just vocally expressed themselves of what they wanted to happen, and it was just like, sure. And I was like, that just seems like such a lazy ending to the to this short run, you would think that a character like a Ghost Hunter would really, that the stakes would be higher and something more would happen. But, I mean, I have a feeling that this is not the end of it, that we're going to, well, obviously we're going to see more of them, but, you know, it reminded me of, Spider-Man 3, when all of a sudden, Hobgoblin and Peter Parker were just like on the same side after fighting each other the whole time. Anyway, they were just buddy-buddy. It was weird. So yeah, overall, didn't like it. I disliked the way that this arc wrapped up.
Yeah, I mean, I totally get where you're coming from, because it, you know, it seemed like they were enemies, and then in the end, you're like, wait, were they enemies? Were they fighting? And then, yeah, like you said, the Harley Quinn thing. Oh, so she is a hero now. I'm trying to be the best Harley Quinn I can be. It's like what? So yeah, it just feels really uneven, and it almost feels like, well, if that's the way it's going to turn out, then what was the point of the conflict in the first place? But at the same time, I do feel like it does set up some interesting things going forward. Like maybe the next couple of issues or next couple of arcs may be interesting. So I think it's too soon to tell. I didn't dislike it, but I do get your point. Because it feels like, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm like you. I can't. Like, it feels like it's. I don't want to say belittling, but it takes away some of the impact of the first part of the arc with the way the story ends. You know, you're like, well, really? That's how it's gonna end up. We're all friends now. So yeah, kind of a little bit disappointed in it myself. Did think the art was good, although it was uneven. That's one where there's several artists on the book, and you can tell when it's one artist versus the other. So, all right. My last book I'm going to talk about is Iron Man number 4 from writer Christopher Cantwell. Art is by Kafu. Colors are by Frank DiArmada. Letters by Joe Caramagna. And this is Iron Man. His big bad has been revealed. The big bad that Cantwell has brought back for Iron Man to face. It's Korvac from the famous Avengers Korvac saga. And in this issue, he's definitely ramping up his evil, so to speak. He's leveling up so he can start to really put his plan in motion. So Tony is still a little unsure of himself, like he has been all along. He's been questioning himself. His relationship with Hellcat continues to develop. And we get introduced, I think this is the first appearance of a new character in the Marvel Universe. But I'm not 100% on that because, you know, I haven't been reading as much Marvel over the last decade. But the character's name is Halcyon, and he seems like a really interesting character that I definitely want to learn more about. When I finished reading this issue, I went and Googled him to see if I could find him in any other books, and I didn't see him. He wasn't showing up as a Marvel character in any other books, at least not in my Google search. So I'm really curious. So if you're listening to this and you know Halcyon has appeared somewhere before, let me know. If you are sure he's never appeared anywhere before, let me know, or maybe I'll just ask Christopher Cantwell to clarify that. But what's up next, what the last few pages of this set up, I'm very excited for. And so yeah, I 100% am just digging on what Christopher Cantwell is doing with Iron Man. Like I've said all along, it feels so reminiscent of my favorite era of Iron Man, from about issue 170 up to about 270, those 100 issues, 250, 270, right in there. And I'm really liking it. Tony, it's sort of similar to what Tynan has been trying to do with Batman, but we haven't actually seen the consequences of it, of Batman not having resources. We're seeing that with Tony. Like Tony by himself, you know, he did it to himself. Hey, I want to get back to basics. I'm going to divest myself of Stark Industries or Stark International, whatever it's called these days. I'm not going to, you know, have the big giant bankroll. I'm going to try to get back to basics. And we are seeing him actually do that. Unlike Batman, we haven't seen any consequences yet. We're seeing that with Tony. And it's just making him more relatable, making him seem more human and not that sort of cardboard cartoonish caricature of Robert Downey Jr. like he's been in the comics for so many years. So really been digging it. The Kafu art, man, it's gorgeous. Some of his best work. I feel like his lines have gotten a little finer. I think the first time I ever saw Kafu's work was in the pages of Valiant. He was doing some work for them. And I thought his art was great there, very dynamic. But I don't think his art, I don't think his line weights were as fine as they are here. And what it does by having such fine line weights is it adds for Tony like a vulnerability, and it gives the art a much more kind of fragile look, and it kind of adds to the tension, because nothing seems really, you know, solid and you know, down to earth. Everything feels a little more like fragile. It's the best way to put it. So everything's it raises the stakes, you know, when you feel like things could break at any time. And the other thing that is really great about this first arc that Christopher Cantwell's been telling is not only are we getting Korvac, classic Marvel villain, he's bringing back as henchmen a lot of classic Iron Man villains, like the Controller and Blizzard and the Unicorn. Like these are Iron Man villains that go way, way back. And it's great to see them all kind of teamed up together working for Korvac. So this is a great time to jump on Iron Man. You don't need to know anything about Iron Man at all whatsoever. You can jump on Christopher Cantwell's run and just start reading it and enjoying it. So highly, highly recommended. All right, Manny, what do you have up next?
I think it's my last book. I have Death Metal number 6 by Scott Snyder, with artwork by Greg Capullo and Jonathan Galapian. 100% setup issue for what should be the final issue next month. So I don't want to give too much away, because I mean, there's not much to tell. The battle has started between the heroes and villains of the DC universe versus the dark multiverse's beings, I guess, that have been put together by the Joker, the Batman who laughs, whatever you want to call him. And so while the battle's going on, we see Wonder Woman and her army of Lobos going right into the heart of the dark multiverse to try and build this machine that she's been talking about. And everything relies on this, on her being successful in her mission. So it's really all it is, and it's all I really want to talk about, just because of the fact that it's better if you read it yourself. It has beautiful splash pages, lots and lots of characters throughout it, very, very bright in color, and definitely worthy of that big event feel that this has been. It's funny because it started off really, I think it started off really slow and kind of messy, and it's really been able to come together for what's going to seem like a bow tie ending that we've been looking for. And so hopefully we can finally put this behind us, and we don't have to deal with Death Metal or a billion different Batmans anymore, because I'm ready for something fresh, which is real interesting though is you can tell me if you think I'm wrong or not, but the way that this is setting up, and I think the way that this story is going to be wrapping up, is I have a feeling that this was definitely supposed to lead into that five gen, the next wave of superheroes, just because of the actions of a lot of heroes that's going on. I think that it's going, not a lot of them are going to make it, and I'm not sure if they are going to change something in that last Death Metal issue to change that, or they're just going to leave it that way and then it's just something's going to reset or something. But I think the whole idea was a lot of these superheroes are going to sacrifice themselves, and the characters that we're only going to see in the early parts of next year they're actually supposed to be the next wave of heroes. And it really had me thinking about that and about all of the changes they had to make and how it's now just an event. I found that really interesting, and it kind of afterwards it kind of took me away from the story because it had me thinking about the overall DC schedule, the DC line going forward.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we already know Batman's dead. That's how come he can wield the Black Lantern ring. We know Superman's been infected with the anti-life equation. So yeah, it makes complete sense why these other, you know, fifth generation of heroes would be rising up. So yeah, I have to imagine they must have changed something. I mean, we know that there's going to have to be some kind of drastic change at the end of seven, because, you know, the entire planet Earth, like the literal continents themselves are rearranged right now. So, you know, yeah, things are not where they need to be. There's going to have to be some kind of reset. But it's interesting. So this is going to end in January. I think the last issue comes out the first week of January. And then the rest of the month is like all future state books as far as the regular DCU. So it definitely gives them time to set up whatever is coming next. But it's going to be interesting to see. So how are they going to do it? Is it just going to be this ends and everything's back to normal? And then we just happen to get the future state books and then everything picks up after future state's over, just like Death Metal didn't happen. I mean, it's so strange because it is such a big event, and it's certainly one of those kind of sprawling events that we talk about. But it's not like it's only happening in the Death Metal books and in the Death Metal tie-ins. When you read the other, because it's supposed to be happening right now in the DC universe, but you go and you read Nightwing, or you go and you read Batman, well, Joker War is going on, or was, but at the same time as this. So, you know, the regular DCU is still existing, but yeah, this is supposed to be happening. You know what I mean? Like if they had raised this to like Crisis on Infinite Earths levels, then every other book would be tied into this, and you would see, you know, there wouldn't be regular cities, right? Because that's the other thing I wonder about Death Metal. It's like, where are the regular normal people? You don't see any of them. All you see is these Mad Max versions of the superheroes, or you see the infinite number of Batmans from the Dark Multiverse.
Well, actually, in this issue, they actually do finally show up briefly. There's regular people.
The
reason why it also I had questions is because actually today, the DC announced that Joker book, which is actually is a follow-up from what happened in Joker War. And then also if we look at the Batman book that we reviewed today, it's going to continue after Future State, whatever they're doing there. And what other book was there? I think there's another book that we talked about last week that's going to just jump over and pick up again after Future State. What I'm getting at is like when we had Darkseid War and we had that like ridiculous battle between the Anti-Monitor and Darkseid, and it was all these heroes and villains and you know, things were happening, people were dying, people were being reborn, I mean, and whatnot, it ended and then it led directly to Rebirth. And so it meant something. It did something, and we saw the repercussions of it for years to come afterwards. Whereas with Death Metal, we're just going to continue like nothing happened, and Future State is more like an event. Like, do you remember when they did those like holographic covers? And they were looking into the future of several of the characters, or like when they did the Villains Month, where the villains took over the books, and those also had holographic covers. It feels something like that. That's no longer that much important. But like you've said a couple of times, they've already paid for these stories, and they've already paid for all these creative teams. You're gonna need to use them. So it's interesting. I guess we'll see after Future State what happens, and we'll be able to see if death metal even feels like it was really worth doing. Not to say that it's not compelling and that it's not a good story, but you know what really weight does it carry in the DC universe as far as stories like Crisis on Infinite Earths, Flashpoint, Darkseid War is another one, the first death metal, and you know, was it even because of all the shifting? What did you just do to how important the story is?
Yeah. I agree with you. They weren't holographic covers. They were the lenticular.
That's what I meant. Lenticular. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. They did. They did the Villains Month. And then it was so successful the following year, they did Future's End.
That's what it was.
Yeah. It was like a flash forward in time. So yeah, I mean, I agree with you. And it's kind of interesting what, cause you can look at it one of two ways. Like what's the lasting impact of death metal? You know, it's supposed to, lead into 5G, which would have been a whole era of DC. I mean, who knows how impactful it would have been. And now you look at it it's still ushering in supposedly an age of everything matters. Everything happened. We certainly have seen that in the last couple of issues of death metal. Snyder specifically has laid that out and even gives reasons for that. And in this issue, we see some of the heroes kind of light bulb moments sort of about things that have happened. And so that's the new status quo going forward. But at the same time, DC is going to be less into continuity. So it's almost like less into continuity in terms of how everything fits together and just pretend everything happened and not worry too much about where everything fits together, or less continuity in that, well, it happened if you wanted it to have happened, and they're just not going to comment on it. I think it's probably going to be more of the second part, and it's going to be interesting to see what diehard DC fans, how they react, because a lot of DC fans, part of the reason they love DC so much is because it is so, they feel like they're a part of something. It is kind of complicated and hard to understand, but when you do kind of grasp it and understand how everything fits together, then you feel like you're kind of, you know, part of the gang, part of the special crew. You're in on the secret, so to speak. So who knows? I mean, we know that a few of the titles that are returning in March, but we still don't know what the tone of the line is going to be. Still so many things we don't know. Obviously we know Tynan is still on Superman or Batman, but we don't know who's on Superman. We've gotten the names of some of the writers. We know there's a John Lantern or a John Stewart Green Lantern book. We know there's a Titans book. We know there's a Wonder Girl book. We know there's a new team on Wonder Woman. We know there's a Joker book, but what is the tone of the line going to be? And maybe they won't. Maybe there won't be an event. Maybe there won't be anything. Maybe there won't even be a tone. Maybe this death metal event is kind of the last hurrah of this sort of thing where books tie into each other, you know, and you're seeing characters in these sort of crossover events. It may just be that DC just, hey, we're just putting out this book. And if you want to read Batman, you read Batman. You don't have to read anything else. You want to read Teen Titans, you read Teen Titans. You don't have to read anything else. And there's not that connectivity tying things together like there has been in DC for years and years. So if that's the case, I just kind of wonder, I mean, it makes it easier if you're a DC fan to just buy what you want and you don't worry about too much other stuff. So I don't know if that's the answer. Maybe it's what Pamela Lyford thinks is the answer, but I don't know that I agree. But I mean, we're going to know a lot more. It'll be really interesting, come June or July of next year to see where DC's at. I don't think we're going to have a San Diego Comic-Con, but maybe we're going to have a New York Comic-Con. And so what does that look like? You know, will DC even want to spend money on that? What kind of presence are they going to have? What, I mean, if you don't really have any kind of events or any big things to look forward to, what do you go and promote at the show? You know, those kind of things. So I don't know.
I'm really like gearing myself up for a bunch of miniseries this 2021.
Yeah, it very well might be, or just might be, short-lived series. Because here's the other thing, right?
that this pandemic has done. Like, we lost Dan as head of DC in January, and there basically was like one big show. We had C2E2, and DC still had plenty of stuff to promote coming up, Rorschach and Strange Adventures and Death Metal and all that. Dan wasn't there, obviously. But then since, you know, after that, we didn't have any shows. We didn't get a San Diego. Like, what would San Diego have been like this year without Dan there as like the pitch man, as the face of DC? Same thing with New York Comic Con. So it's so interesting that all this transition has been happening, and we haven't, it's almost like we haven't really seen what the other side is, because there haven't been any shows.
Because I mean, Jim Lee's great and everything, but he doesn't have that charisma, that, you know, that Dan Didio charisma to that salesman, you know?
Yep.
That he does when, especially at those panels where it's just the meet the publishers panels, where he's really interactive.
Yep.
And he's almost responding to what we're telling him in the audience, and he kind of directs it that way. And of course he has his main bullet points to get across, but you really feel like you're part of the conversation.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. I will say, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't. I'm gonna look it up right now. So there is for the Hero Initiative, they're doing these things called talent talks. If you go to talenttalklive.com, you can look them up, or you can go to the Hero Initiative, or go to Hero Initiative's Twitter feed, and you'll find them. But basically, what they are is they're kind of like these Zoom sessions with all these different talented people. And you can go and you can sign up. It costs money, and the money goes to the Hero Initiative. So it's to a charity, and you can sign up. So last week, I think it was, maybe it was on Sunday. Maybe it was this week. Anyway, I signed. They had one for Dan on January 15th. Dan's going to be on there, and you can sign up for the Zoom session and get to talk to him for an hour. It's $50. And there's only 10 seats available. As soon as I saw that, man, I signed up. I was like, shh. You know, I've sent Dan a couple emails. He hasn't gotten back to me, so he can't dodge me if I sign up for this. So I signed up, and I've been checking it periodically to see if anybody else has signed up. It's been nine left in stock. I just looked it up right now. Now there's 8. So somebody else finally signed up. I was kind of thinking, I mean, granted, it's still, you know, almost a month away. And I'm sure more people are going to join, or probably will sell out. But I was thinking back, I'm like, what happens if it's just me and Dan, if I'm the only one, nobody else has signed up. So I'm really looking forward to it. And I'm going to try to get Dan. I mean, I don't know what the rules are, if they, whatever, can I solicit him to come on? Hey, Dan, dude, get back to me on those emails. Come, we need you to come on the show. So it's going to be interesting. I'm really looking forward to it. It's 55 minutes, supposedly. So it's less than $1 a minute. It's $50 to talk to Dan. But yeah, it's just going to be great to see him, man. I've missed him. You know, I see him at shows, almost all the shows I do, he's there, or a majority of them, at least, well, maybe half of them. But I see him, you know, several times throughout the year at the comic shows, and I didn't get to see him this year. We saw him in January, and you know, and that was it. And it was great to see him then. But so much to talk to. I can't wait to see him. So it was really cool. So go check it out if you're curious. If you want to talk to Dan Didio, I hope people aren't asking him a bunch of questions about how did it feel to get fired, or, you know, just trying to get dirt. You know, I hope they just let him, you know, let's just talk some comics, maybe talk a little baseball. You know, he's a huge Mets fan, so he's got to be excited the Mets finally got sold. But
yeah.
Anyway, it's been, yeah, like I said, it's been a weird year. No cons, no Dan. Maybe it's better for DC, you know, because when cons come back, people, it's going to be enough time's going to have gone by, and they're going to be doing whatever they're doing, that you're not going to miss him. But I think his absence would have been noticeable at San Diego for DC this last year.
Yeah, a post-COVID DC at any show is going to be interesting to follow, see what the heck that looks like.
Yeah. Their booth's going to be, you know, whatever. Some folding chairs and some string and some balloons, or whatever Pamela Lyford can can get for her $9.99.
It's going to be the back wall of their mega booth or whatever they call it.
Yeah, it's just bad. It's all kinds of bad. All right, well, let me go ahead and go down the list of some of the other titles you might want to be on the lookout for today. And we'll wrap this thing up. So from Aftershock Comics, Kaiju Score number one, second printing, in case you missed it the first time around. We have Miskatonic number two, and We Live number three. And series has been really, really good. And that was one of the ones I wanted to read that I didn't get to talk about. So apologies for that. Dropping my stupid phone really put me behind. Over at AWA Studios, we have American Ronin number three. From Boom, we have The Expanse, number one of four. So if you're a big fan of The Expanse, you may want to look into that. We also have Power Rangers number two, and We Only Find Them When They're Dead, written by Al Ewing. That's up to number three. At DC, in addition to the books we talked about, Amethyst number six of six, which wraps up that story. Batman's Grave number 12 of 12, which wraps up that story. That's the Brian Hitch, Warren Ellis series. So with all the bad publicity that Warren Ellis got this year, probably don't expect to see. And plus, he's expensive. I don't expect to see any Warren Ellis at DC anymore for a really long time. And I haven't even been noticing him putting out any independent books. So he may have burned his career to the ground. I don't know. I kind of have a hard time fully embracing that idea only because he's so talented. But he did himself a lot of harm with his behavior, so he may have to go underground for a little while, keep his head down. Also, Catwoman number 28, I did read that one, didn't talk about it. I did talk to Ram V recently, too, and we'll have him on the show sometime in the future. But, man, is he killing it. Is he killing it on that book? I will continue to compare it to a Michael Mann movie and the best, most authentic voice of Selina Kyle ever. Like, it's my favorite probably my favorite Catwoman that I've ever read is by Ram V, man. He's doing an amazing job. Green Lantern season two is up to number 10 from Grant Morrison and Liam Sharp. We have a Nightwing number 77. I wanted to read that one too, just again, ran out of time. That one's supposed to be a holiday story. So I'll check that out when I get the chance. The final issue, you've been waiting for it just like I have, not because you wanted to read it, but just because it means he's done. Brian Bendis on Superman number 28. And he ends just the way he's run the whole series. It's bad. It's not good. You can tell how hard he's trying. And I don't know, maybe he doesn't have a good fundamental understanding of who Superman is, but it falls flat. The art by Yvonne Reese is excellent though. But I really want to know who's on Superman come March. We haven't been told that yet. But just glad that Bendis is moving on, and I hope whatever he does next is a lot better than what his run on Superman was. From IDW, Lock and Key and Pale Battalions Go, number three of three. So that's finishing up the most recent Lock and Key miniseries. At Image, Commanders in Crisis, number three of 12, I'll mention. That's another series I've really been enjoying that I didn't get a chance to read yet this week. We've also got Savage Dragon number 255 from Eric Larson and Walking Dead Deluxe number 5, which is obviously the colorized version of The Walking Dead. Over at Marvel, there's a new Black Cat series starting with number 1 this week. There's also Captain America number 26 with a really cool Alex Ross cover. We've got a couple of tie-ins for Ten of Swords, I guess, New Mutants number 14 and X-Force number 15. We also have Taskmaster number 2 of 5, which is, I really enjoyed issue 1, just didn't get a chance to read issue 2 yet. So those are some of the other titles that you should be on the lookout for today. As always, we want to thank everybody for listening. Be sure you check out our other episodes that are out today and the rest of our 12 Days of the Comic Source episodes that are coming out as we head to Christmas. So as always, everybody, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.